Hey there, I'm Sandy Scarlatta, and welcome to the Happiness Solve podcast. Twice a week, we explore the journey to finding true happiness by sharing inspiring stories, practical tips, and insightful conversations with some of today's leading experts. But we don't just scratch the surface. We dive deep into the real grit of what it takes to live a genuinely happy life. Whether you're looking to improve your well-being, enhance your relationships, or simply add more joy to your life, you're in the right place. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfortable, and let's dive into today's episode. Because happiness is a choice, and the choice is yours. Hey, you beautiful goddess, Allison.
Hello.
Hello. I have your page, Bruna. And I was like, oh, I'm going to start with that.
I love it. That's my favorite line.
I love it. Yeah. So folks, yeah, you go to Allison's website and it's, hey, you beautiful goddess, I'm Allison. I love that. I love that. And for the listeners, Allison helps women in midlife reimagine the next chapter of their lives and feel like $10 million in their businesses, bodies, bank accounts, and bedrooms. Woo. All right. 4 degrees in psychology, mental health, human behavior. Cheesy peasy. You've worked everywhere from NYU to Mount Sinai to the FBI, Planned Parenthood, and even Rikers Island. Wow. Wow. You have seen the depths of human struggle, the weight of trauma, and the power of transformation. And you're here to make damn sure women stop holding themselves back. Woohoo, sister. Let's go. That is awesome. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. See, I don't plan a whole lot in advance because it takes away my, you know, element of surprise. Love this. Wow. So I love this. Your work is rooted in your signature philosophy, the yes, I am too much principle. Let's dive into that.
Yeah, I love to talk about it. So I always like to start with a little story. So I one day was chatting with my husband and he's a great guy, right? He's a great guy. We have been together for a long time. I had been doing a lot of healing work and we were having some heated discussion and it started to elevate. And at some point he looked at me and was like, you are being way too much. And historically that had been something that really would have thrown me like right off the rails, right? Like the idea of being too dramatic or being too emotional or being too bossy, like really anything that followed the word too was so like, it was so offensive to me if someone called that. And it was this first time that I guess I had done like enough healing work or had been like spending enough time thinking about my own self-worth. And when he said that, it just hit differently. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, then I guess I am, right? Like I am not going to continue to shrink what I need or how I feel or what I want because you're uncomfortable. So this really feels like a you freaking problem. And I like immediately went out with some girlfriends and I was just like, ew, like, why is he calling me too much? And my friend was like, well, I think this is the birth of a book. And it subsequently has been, right? So the yes, I am too much principle is really the idea that like the world, particularly for women, I get a little feminist here, right? Like particularly for women, we get asked so much, right? Like we're always doing things for everybody, whether it's in our careers, in our motherhood, and just like being of service to other people. And there's really so many juncture points that we can ask to be like, to shrink, right? And I work with a lot of women as a therapist and as a coach over my career, hundreds at this point. And a really common denominator that I find is like women do very often, like, you know, I just want to keep coming back to the word shrink, right? Either they're like scared to speak up at a meeting or they don't want to tell their partner what they like intimately because they're scared their partner is going to feel rejected. It's just all of these different points. And so the yes, I am too much principle asks each woman that I work with and women everywhere, right? To really just trust themselves harder and deeper and understand that their self-worth is tied to absolutely nothing outside of themselves. It doesn't matter if they have children. It doesn't matter if they have a career. It doesn't matter how much money is in their bank account, right? It's like each one of us is a unique, you know, I'm going to use the word goddess here, right? Like goddess in our lives and to the world. And we are just so amazing, right? Like women and people do amazing things. And so when we can really adopt the philosophy that's just like, I am too much. I'm going to be too much for some people. I'm going to be too dramatic for some people. I'm going to be too bossy for some people. And that's okay. That really is outside of me. And I have to hold on to my sense of truth. And I always say it's not meant to be argumentative, right? It's not like, yes, I am too much, right? It's just holding your head up high and your shoulders back and like walking into the world, into rooms, like, you know, that you deserve to be there. And it really is, you know, it sounds really cliche and it sounds really like, really, that's your grand secret. Just like hold your head higher and like anchor into that self-trust. But like, it really is pivotal for everything, right? From, I always say, from like, from bedrooms to bodies to bank accounts, like everything in between. When we start to actually show up to our lives really, really rooted in I am worth it, right? Everything changes, from our ability to ask for a raise to our pleasure centers, right? What we're willing, our self-care starts to change. Like, it just is really, really foundational. So I always start there. I have a lot more to say on it, but that's my Cliff Notes version.
I love it. I love it. I always say I'm an acquired taste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because not like, everybody's meant to taste me.
For me, you know, I'm a weirdo. I've been a weirdo my whole life. I own it. And, you know, if you don't like me, oh, well, that's your problem, not mine. I don't care. You know, I really don't.
Yeah, isn't that so liberating? Like,
well, it is. Yeah. I'm not better than anybody else. It's not like, you know, there's none of that. There's no ego attached to it. It's just, this is who mm-hmm. I am. And I'm tired of playing small. I'm tired of, yeah, I'm into woo-woo. And yeah, I believe aliens are out there. Yeah. And you know what? I'm not going to hide it. Right? Like, that's it. Yeah. That's who I am. I don't care if you don't believe it. Right? Like, mm-hmm. but like, I literally will show up happy hour with girlfriends and I just sit and play small because I you know, they look at me with five heads. But like, no, mm-hmm. like, I am who I am. This is who I am. Yeah. Take it or leave it, you know?
That's it. And like, and giving yourself and other people the permission to leave it, right? Like if someone is leaving yeah. you, it's not a reflection of you. It's just a compatibility. Like, I don't know how many people are in the world, a lot, right? And we're not meant 8 billion people in the world. Like, we're not meant to be everybody's cup of tea. And yeah. like, you know, we do find ourselves molding, like, oh, I'm too, ooh, I shouldn't tell everybody that I believe in aliens. And it's like, no, at the end of the day, like you build it and they will come, right? I have found that me owning who I actually am in life has actually shifted, certainly, like my immediate circle, right? Like, I'm surrounded by women and friends and family who, you know, get it. They want the same things as I do. They lift me up. I lift them up. And it's like, that's so, it's just so liberating. It's just like, what a release that I don't have to impress everybody, or I don't have to shape shift to meet their needs, right? It's like, I can just be who I am and the right people will find me, the right opportunity will find me, the right clients are going to find me. And with that in mind, I mean, my life, I just last night was sitting in the bathtub and I was like, man, I love my life. And I thought how sad it is that so many people don't have that. And that doesn't mean I don't have bad days. It doesn't mean that I don't have stress or trauma or ugliness in my life. Like, I've had my share, I promise. But it's just the ability to, you know, re-pivot and, like, you know, I don't believe in like toxic positivity or anything like that. Like, we're allowed to honor the wounded and the hard parts. But when I scale back in my life, I'm making decisions that are aligned with who I am. And therefore, my career is in a better place, right? I used to work as like a private investigator. It was very soul-sucking. I was very good at it, but it was soul-sucking. I'm much better as a therapist. I'm much happier as a therapist, right? I'm in a really successful marriage because I finally am speaking my expectations and giving him the opportunity to rise to them, right? Rather than smothering them all down and just feeling resentful, right? I'm picking really great friends that, you know, have the same sense of adventure as me. It's like, it just, yeah, it changes.
Well,
juicy step.
In relationships, communication is the most important thing, mm-hmm. you know, and marriages dissolve because of communication. At some point,
absolutely.
Communication broke down.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
I mean, not that I'm an expert, but I am on my second marriage and I was married for 21 years and we just celebrated 13 years together, 10 years of married. And he is still the love of my life. I am so madly in love. There's days I have to pinch myself because I turned 60 this year. And I'm like, I never thought in a million years I would be in a relationship that I, like, he left on Monday morning for a business trip. He comes back tonight. I cannot wait. Like, I cannot wait for him to come home. Like, yes. I miss him terribly. And
yeah.
we've been home together
point.
For 5 years. Yeah. Like, we've, you know, we both work from home and have since COVID. And so,
yeah.
you know. It's not always easy. Is it perfect? No, it's not. But we communicate very, very well. And that's
yeah.
a big, big thing. And it's like that with anybody, whether it's your girlfriend, your family, mm-hmm. business associates, whatever, communication.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to echo that to the moon and back. Like, communication to me is like such a fundamental part of any relationship and success within that relationship. And, you know, if you're listening and you're like, but I don't know how to communicate, the beautiful part is it is just a skill, right? We can learn how to communicate better and express our needs. But a lot of the women that I work with, you know, it'll start with like, okay, but I can't even get to the communication part because like, I haven't figured out what I want yet. So I always try to guide people. It's like, communication is so important, but you have to kind of do the insight work, like the insightful work, the reflection work first. So like, you know, I do in my marriage, so we've been together for 15 years, we've been married for four, almost five. You know, I've had to like really relook at things, especially as we get older, right? Like I'm a different person than what I was in my 20s and my 30s and now my mid 40s. So I've had to recalibrate, right? It's like, oh, this thing I used to like, maybe I don't really like anymore. Or maybe this, I want to try this other thing. And again, that can, you know, certainly show up sexually, but also just in life, like life stuff, right? My career has pivoted. My husband's career has pivoted. So it's a constant like re-exploration and then the communication. And that can feel overwhelming, but it's actually really fun. if you allow yourself the space to do it and give yourself the permission to change and to recalibrate and to get to communicate that with your partner and give them the opportunity to share it with you, it's rad.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So on your website, you talk about how, you know, one of your, I'm going to say target for marketing purposes, your target audience is women in their midlife. Mm-hmm. What do you find is the common denominator, if there is, for why women? I mean, men go through it too, but at a different time. Mm-hmm. Most women, I think it's usually in our 40s. I'm only saying that because I know that almost every woman that I know, almost, not all of them, married their college sweetheart. They're in their 40s and now they're all divorced after 20 mm-hmm. years of marriage or 20 some years of marriage. What is there a common theme?
Yeah. So yeah, I think so. So there's something called the sunk cost fallacy, which I think shows up a lot in midlife. And what that means is that a lot of the times when we've spent a lot of time doing something, we feel hyper committed to it. Right. And so the ability to release something that's no longer serving us is actually really, really hard. And like the beautiful part about midlife is we have a lot of collective, like we've collected a lot of lived experience, right? So we've had a lot of information coming to us. And maybe our partner in our 20s was actually the most ideal partner because that's who we were back then. But now 20 years later, we've suddenly discovered new things about ourselves. We have new needs. We have new interests. And that can show up in our friendships, our relationships, our careers for sure. So what happens in midlife is when we have all this new rediscovery, right? Like, oh, I actually want to try something else. Like I hate my career, right? I married my high school sweetheart and it was excellent when I was 16. But actually he's not spontaneous or she's not, you know, money savvy or ambitious. And like we grow apart. And that actually is fundamentally very normal and expected. And it's really hard inside of marriage, right? Because we've, you know, committed to someone. But it's why we, you know, in my work, I'm like, we are allowed to change our minds, even in marriage, even in marriage, right? And like, ultimately, it's the reconviction that it's like, I'm allowed to choose what I want at any time and give myself permission to change. So like, why does this show up so often in midlife, this like recalibration? It's like, because we should naturally want different things than we wanted in our 20s, 30s, and 40s, right? How I dress looks different. The music I listen to is different. Like what I watch on TV is different. How I vacation is different. So it makes a whole lot of sense that what I want out of my career or relationship or a friendship or insert any other thing here changes in our midlife. And it's probably going to change again, right? So I think though, particularly for women, if we feel very frightened by that change or we feel like we've failed, right? Like, but I was always a teacher and I always wanted to be a teacher. And now I'm 40 and I don't really like being a teacher anymore. If we internalize that as a failure, right, as we've done something wrong, it brings up a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, right? And so what I like to guide women back to is like, look, that's just your insight talking to you, right? We can get creative and flexible here. Maybe it does mean you need a career pivot. Maybe it does mean it's time for divorce, right? Maybe it does mean I need to change my whole friend circle. That's the extreme. That's what actually happened for me, right? I called off my wedding in my 30s. I changed my entire career in my 40s. It doesn't have to be that extreme, right? Sometimes, to your point, it just means better communication, maybe inviting in some more exploration. But I think sort of a reinvention is almost a natural rite of passage in our 40s, 50s, and 60s, right? Like, it's actually really beautiful. It's what's supposed to happen. We are not supposed to be the same person we were when we were 20 or 30. We're not.
Yeah. Well, and now it's probably coming in, you know, to the forefront more and more. Because, like, for me, for example, you know, my mom, who I moved, she lives with me now. I moved her out of assisted living because I don't trust the memory care. But she's, you know, going to be 85 and, you know, was married to my father for 47 years, my stepfather for 47 years. Things are very, were different then. You know, she stuck it out. And a lot of people did that because divorce was not an option, right?
Yeah.
And nowadays, you know, now we're getting more and more, you know, the batons are being passed down to different generations and people are recognizing that, when man, I'm using air quotes because I believe that it was man who created Till Death Do Us Part. You got married at 15 or 12 and you were dead by the time you were 30. So
that's right.
It was a very different, you know, term as opposed to now because we're living longer and things like that. But the other thing that I just wanted to bring up and I wanted to see what your thoughts were was, you know, our unconscious mind or subconscious mind, same thing. I prefer to call it unconscious mind, is really what's running the show. That's our operating system. Mm-hmm. And it's that operating system with most people that needs to be tweaked because it's been flawed because of childhood trauma and, you know, all of those things. But my favorite example is, you know, when I was 10, an art teacher, I loved art. I'm a very creative person. And at 10 years old, I presented my assignment to her. And she looked at it and told me it was terrible. Now, what do you think that did to my 10-year-old mind?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For decades, I'm not creative. I suck at art. I mean, to this day, I'm still trying to, you know, I feel like I've worked through it. And I want to take art. Biggest holdback for me is because there's no freaking art classes for adults. They're all for children.
Gotta create them.
gotta find an art class. YouTube. Go to YouTube University. But my point is that that, limit, you know, so that day I made a decision that I'm not creative. And what did that do? That transformed into dozens of limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
I'm not good at this. I'm not good, you know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And that's the thing. And so by the time we get to our mid 40s, just imagine how many of those limiting beliefs are running the show. So I would love to hear your expertise as a therapist.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking my language here. I love brain science stuff. Everything you're saying is absolutely accurate and founded in actual brain science. So the more we think something, I won't bore you with a whole speech on brain science here, but you'll trust that I actually know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about.
You know? So, you know, the 10 cent speech is we have what's called neural pathways, right, in our brain. And so when we think something, it actually creates a neural pathway. And the more that we think it, the more thick it becomes, right? So, and we love to generalize, right? Our brains don't love to like have a very like if then, if then, if then. It has a blanket if then. So, you know, in your example, which I think is a really good one, it wasn't like, oh, this one art project by this one teacher is not good enough. It's suddenly blanketed to I'm not creative. Right. And that probably then showed up so many, like, again, subconsciously, without any overt attention in so many ways. And like, maybe it translated to art. And maybe it was like, you're sitting at a board meeting and someone's like, hey, do you have an idea? And you're like, no, I'm not creative. Right. And so part of the work that I do is really like smashing those limiting beliefs. Right. And when I have a therapy client, something that we'll do is I started doing this with children and I actually found it was much more helpful with adults. There's like a picture of a person and it's like, write all the things you think about yourself inside the person, right? I'm not creative, blah, 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 right? And then we actually take a, like a marker and it's like, where did you first hear this? Who told you you weren't creative? And we suddenly start to see if we take an inventory of our thoughts, it was really outside of us. Like, right? We actually do think we're creative, right? And someone pulled that out, right? I was working with a client recently and she was telling me how, you know, she's in her 50s and she was like, you know, I always wanted to just go like play baseball. It's like, go play. I don't know where I'm sure we could find an adult baseball team. Right. And she's like, ugh, it's so unfeminine to play baseball. Right. Like, I guess you could play softball. And it's like, again, who made that rule? Right. Like, I don't know. We might need a little flexibility and creativity to go find the opportunity to reconnect you to that. But let's at least start with the idea that like, you can totally be a very feminine woman and enjoy playing baseball with a baseball and not even a softball, right? But someone stripped that away from her when she was young. They were like, no, you got to go play with the girls, right? And then she just lost interest and stopped playing. And I think for women in midlife, particularly, the one that I noticed the most, like, you know, each one of us have these really individualized narratives, but the one that shows up very often as like a Venn diagram for women in midlife is like, I'm too old or it's too late, right? Like, so those happen so often. So also with women, and whether if we're talking about like, okay, well, what if you did want to marry? What if you actually did want passionate love, right? And maybe you're in a marriage that doesn't have that. It's like, well, it's too late now. Like, I'm not 20 anymore. And it's like, no, you can totally have that. I don't care if you're 80, right? If that's what you want and that's what's on your heart, we can get that. And again, maybe it means recalibrating a relationship. Maybe it means looking for a new relationship. But there's no such thing as it's too late or too old, right? And another client that was recently telling me that they wanted to start an Etsy shop. And I was like, so start it. Well, let's start an Etsy shop. Like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah. She was like, but that's so embarrassing. Like, ugh, it's like, that's a juvenile. She wanted to make little crochet animals. And she's like, that's so juvenile. And it says who, right? Like, who made up the rule that you as a 52-year-old woman can't start an Etsy shop selling crochet animals? So it really does come back to, like, that creates an impasse when we have those thoughts, right? We shut the door to it. And then our behaviors follow, right? If I think that's a silly idea, everyone's going to judge me. I'm too old for that. We're not going to then make the next step to actually make the little animals or open or like put up the website. And so, you know, I like to just let women be expansive. It's like, this is your intuition talking. Again, each one of us have a really unique imprint on this life. And this is where you are now. This part of you is telling you something. It's telling you what you want. The challenge is to just like shut out the outside noise and like really re-harness into like our inner voice, because our inner voice has an inner knowing. It knows what we want, right? It's just like we immediately then ping pong to the like, but that my Uncle Sal said that was a stupid idea. And this person in our class when I was 10 told me that I'm not even creative and I have no business. What do I know about marketing? And it's like, nope, we're just going to wash all that away because it's BS at the end of the day, right?
Well, you said it, that the example that I used, that came from outside of me. And most of it does come outside ourselves. And when we're when we're saying, when we're judging another person or we're comparing ourselves to another person, we're really doing that to ourselves, because our unconscious mind only knows that I'm here. It doesn't know that Mary is out there. But when I say I don't like Mary's dress or Mary looks, you know, whatever in that dress, all I'm doing is holding a mirror up to myself, you know, absolutely. And all of these limiting decisions come from external sources.
They really do.
Because we are enough. We are enough. And we're born enough.
It's so true.
Yeah.
I have a 10-month-old and I marvel at her every day,
congratulations.
I look at her. Thank you. Speaking of later life, like I'm not only an older mom, I just turned 44. My husband's actually in his early 60s. So it's really never too late. You can do this at any time.
Oh, good for you. And,
or at least try. But I was looking at my 10-month-old and I was just thinking like, what a little bubble of life that she's living in right now, where like no one has taken anything away from her, right? Like there's no, we were in like a music class and it was so cute. It was, oh my God, music class for babies is just adorable. And she was like rocking out. She was like sitting on her knees and just like jamming. And I was thinking like, oh God, if we could just like bottle this up and hand it to like every adult, right? It's like, she's just present and mindful and in the moment and like living her most joyous self. And she doesn't care what she looks like and she doesn't care if she has rhythm, right? And it's like, again, we need to kind of like re-anchor to that version of us that had like less F's to give, right? And again, not in this like confrontational way, but in just a like, I have the inner wisdom to understand what puts a smile on my face and what builds me up and what raises my vibration and all of those things that we say. And I also have the insight to understand what's tugging at it, right? What circles I'm in that make me feel bad, right? What positions and situations I'm in that dim my light. And I think like, if we can kind of bring some awareness to those things, that does give us sort of a starting point for like, okay, I want to invite in more joy and fulfillment and confidence. And like, you know, you just said like, my husband's coming home and I'm lighting up. I can't wait. It's like, that's a pretty good indicator that you're on the right. You're in alignment to the things that make you feel good. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. So you also help people, or help women rather, with even if they need like career.
Yeah. Yeah.
Launching a new business. Money story. Let's talk about your money story, because that's such a big one. I was just trying to do it this week. I don't like to keep these episodes too long, and we could talk all day, but let's talk about rewriting your money story. I would love to hear what you have, your thoughts on that. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's one of my favorite topics. So I had this like grand epiphany not that long ago that like, I was talking about my best friends. We know everything about each other. And she was negotiating her salary. And she kept like, she would tell me what was going on with her business, but she wouldn't ever say the number for her salary. And I got home and I was thinking like, I know very intimate details about this woman. And yet like, she never said her salary. And it became an awareness to me that money, that women feel very scared to talk about money. Right. And so I started to do like my own mindset work on that. And it really birthed sort of like how I try to help others. But I think particularly for women, there is this absolute air to like wealth equals greed, right? Like wanting money, wanting compensation means like it's ugly, right? And I know this as a therapist, right? Because like I've had the journey of having to increase my rates over the years, right? And something that I notice myself saying is like, no, but I'm not doing it for the money. Right. And it's like, oh, actually, I can do it for the money. And also because I'm a good person who loves to help people. And it just sort of brought so much awareness to me of how much there is to unpack in our money stories. So, you know, it's first of all, certainly like that wealth equals greed, wanting money equals, you know, selfishness. And then beyond that, like a lot of people come from deprivation mindset. They're scared to spend money. They're scared to save money. They're scared to earn money, right? And just like the idea that like there's not going to be more, right? So it's like I get it and I have to like panic around it. And that really is very suffocating. So how I always pitch it is like, particularly with ladies, it's like, think about how amazing the world would be if like money was in the hands of awesome women. Like the world would be a different place, right? And so if we kind of like reconceptualize it as almost like a civic duty, right? Like I raised my rates, but it also allows me to give back, right? I give a lot of money to charity. I do free events. I'm a very generous person with the people in my inner circle. So it's like, it's actually a power move, right? It's not that I'm greedy or I'm selfish or that I'm showy. It's like, oh, I have this beautiful resource that is helping make my life easier for sure. And other people's, you know, lives well, better as well. And again, back to those like external factors. If I think back to my own money story, like, sorry, mom, she doesn't listen to my podcast anyway. It's like, I can hear a lot of her in it, right? Like even now, you know, I'm like, hey, I'm launching two different coaching programs at this moment. One's like pretty high ticket. And she was like, but what if nobody sells up? What if it's too expensive? Right. And it's like immediately that like part of me that's scared to ask for more, right? It's like, it gets triggered. And it's like, I've done a lot of work in trying to rewrite it. It's still hard even for me who teaches it. Right. And it's like, I have to then shut the door to my mom. Like, no, that narrative is not helpful for me. Right. Actually, let's lean back in and like repractice my mantra, which is like, money in the hands of women and good women makes the world a better place. And with that conviction, I actually very boldly and proudly can move into my high ticket offer. So, you know, money, I think, is one of the hardest things to sort of unpack because there's so much around it, especially from our parents, how they spent money, how they earned money, what they thought of money. But just like everything else, we do have the power to rewrite it and adopt a more empowering, confident-based philosophy.
Yeah. And really just, I think it's as simple as thinking back to like, when was the first time you heard something, you know, about money or whatever. And I remember as a competitive figure skater, I remember there was one time my skating coach said to me, you know, can you ask your mom, like, she owes me for like 3 months of lessons. And I was like, right. Mm-hmm. And I was brought into that. Mm-hmm. And don't need to go down that rabbit hole there. But that had a big impact on me and my relationship with money, right? Mm-hmm. Because of witnessing that and being, you know, 8 years old and having to, mom, you know, mm-hmm. you need to pay my coach. You haven't paid my coach, you know.
Yeah.
Hindsight, is that something the coach really needed to say to an eight-year-old? Probably not. But
absolutely not.
But, right. you know, but whatever. It is what it is. So, yeah, a lot. And if you can go back and think about those times when it happened and try to just, you know, give yourself some grace and look at it with neutrality and not put any emotion to it, because that's what an eight-year-old would do, is you put emotion into it, and then that carries with you for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Unless you go in and change that narrative. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that.
Oh my gosh. This has been such a great conversation, Allison, and I love your energy and your personality and really, really fun. There's so much we could still talk about, but is there anything else that I didn't talk about that you'd like to throw out? And also let people know your website as well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it always sort of sounds cliche, and I think we covered this point, but I'm just going to beat it a little bit. Like, if you are listening and you are in this position in your life where you want to change your career, or you want to change, you know, you want to get involved in a new interest, or you want to change your relationship with your partner or your relationship with your body, like, it is not too late, and you are not too old for any of that. Every single person, like, you've acquired a lot of narrative and you've acquired a lot of influence. Your brain can be rewired, right? Like, that's the beautiful part about neural pathways, is like, we absolutely can even like let the old ones overgrow and bring in and invite brand new, you know, sexy, powerful, confident neural pathways. And so like, if you are feeling stuck or exhausted or burnt out, that you don't have to live there. Like, there is what's behind door number two. Right. And so I think just reminding people, particularly women, that like, change is possible at any step, at any financial, like, where, it doesn't matter where you are in your marriage, in your finances, where you're living, in your career. It's like, every person has the ability to change their life. It's just actually quite only a few decisions, believe it or not, away from like an entirely different life, if that's what you want. So there is hope yet, is how I like to leave people. And if you want to find me, I, you know, live on the internet, as we all do these days. My website is anotefromyourtherapist.com. And I'm pretty much on all the socials by the same handle. So, a note from your therapist.
Love it. I love that. A note from your therapist. And of course, folks, all of those websites will be listed in the show notes as well. So, Allison, thank you so much for the work
thank
that you,
you
do.
Thank you so much.
I love it. Women need people like you to help guide them to finding their purpose. It's not easy, but it can be done. It's actually very simple. But it's not easy.
Amen to that.
Just like everything in life. All right. Yep. All right, folks. Thank you so much, Allison. And thank you for listening, everyone. And I hope that you and your family are happy and healthy, and that your lives are filled with peace, joy, and abundance of happiness. Take care, everyone.